everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert.
And I'm Mike Kresnick.
And I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Coram Deo's intern, the Travis Barrett. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about America's friendship recession.
Hey, before we dive into that topic, three things. One, this is Travis Barrett's second to last podcast.
Mm. Wah, wah. Trombone sound file wah. Right there.
Two, we're trying out some new things. We're actually videoing this podcast. So there's some cameras here. You may or may not ever see what's on these cameras because we're testing things to see if we want to put a video version of this podcast mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. So if you listeners are like, yes, I've been waiting for the video version. Great. email Mike Kresnick and tell him yes, yes, yes. Because otherwise we're just going to make the call based on how much extra time does it take us to make a video podcast.
Yeah.
We're not sure yet. That's why we're testing this out. Third, man. Camille in Long Island.
Yes.
Camille.
What an amazing listener you are.
She really came through.
Hey, Camille didn't just send us some snacks. She called the bakery across the street from our church building mm-hmm. and ordered us fresh pastries and had them brought over here.
And she ordered some of our favorite pastries from mm-hmm. this bakery.
So Camille, great. Above and beyond.
Yeah.
Above and beyond.
Great job, Camille. Thank you so much.
So we're enjoying pastries while talking about the American friendship recession. If you're watching the video, you'll notice the many pieces of paper that I have because I'm old school. Everybody else has a laptop in front of them.
I got printed copies.
I got paper and pastries.
I like my hard copies. This topic was teed up by an article from David French that a friend of mine sent me a week ago. And David French is sort of editorializing and reflecting on a study that came out. And so I read the David French article, but I was more interested in the study and a couple of the analyses of the study. So let me start with the research study that was done and released. This is from July 6th, 2021. Daniel A. Cox from the Survey Center on American Life. Let me read a few sections where he lays out the results of this study. A new survey conducted by the Survey Center on American Life finds that over the past three decades, the number of close friends Americans have has plummeted. This friendship recession is particularly bad for men. The percentage of men with at least six close friends fell by half since 1990. The study also found the percentage of men without any close friends jumped from 3% to 15%. The Tim Keller tweeted out just a snapshot of the graph that goes along with this study. And basically what it shows is 15% of men and 10% of women in America report that they have zero close friends. That's not good.
No, can't be good. Zero's never good.
usually not, depending on the scale you're using. Sometimes zero is good, but usually not. And certainly not in this case. In 1990, only 3% of men said they had no close friends. Now it's 15. In 1990, only 1.5% of women said they had no close friends. Now it's 10. And so it seems that in spite of how connected we are and how many Facebook friends we have and how busy our lives are, we have fewer friends than we used to have.
We don't know exactly how they're, managing this data with what you would call a close friend and what they're calling a close friend.
Yes, but we don't know what the actual question was of how do I name a close friend.
So, Bob, how many close friends would you say you have?
I would say 5 to 10.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Hopefully that means we're semi healthy. How many would you say you have, Bethany? How many close friends?
More than us.
7 or 8.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I was thinking, though, have you guys heard that joke about Jesus's greatest miracle was having 12 friends in his 30s. That's the first thing I thought of. So,
especially in the 30s.
Apparently that's true. Okay, so the survey notes that for men particularly, the news is especially bad. And the author of the article goes on to ask, hey, what are some possible reasons for that? you know, he does your basic differences between men and women. Men tend to be a little more loners. Women tend to do better at sustaining engaged relationships. But one interesting observation he makes is that there are structural factors at work as well. In a 2019 research project, we found that higher rates of loneliness among millennials was due primarily to lower religious involvement, lower marriage rates, and greater geographic mobility. So it does seem that not only is this maybe like an internal sense or sense of loneliness, but there's a societal and structural factor here too. We're less likely to go to a church. We're less likely to be in the same place for a long time and hang out with our neighbors. There's just a way that the mobility and the disconnection of American life maps onto this as well. What David French points out is he links an article from Damon Linker in The Week, where Damon Linker basically says, hey, this is a bad sign for our society, culture, and economy. Here's why. Because it provides a potent sociological explanation for why our politics have become much more polarized in recent decades. Let me read you what he says here. It's actually really interesting. He says that human beings are social creatures. We seek out connection with others of our kind. The standard way for people to do this is to have collective experiences out in the world, in extended families, local community, religious organizations, work, unions, clubs, and politics. These are all the things that are coming apart, right? Going all the way back to Robert Putnam's famous book from the 1990s, Bowling Alone, he's mapped the fact that we're less likely to participate in civic organizations and bowling leagues and these kinds of things. And so Damon Linker says, the rise of the internet, and especially social media, has opened up other possibilities for social interaction. People sharing similar interests, hobbies, quirks, and obsessions can easily find each other online and enjoy a digital facsimile of friendship. I love that phrase.
You can fax it in.
A digital facsimile of friendship with others. These virtual communities are more like collective groups of topic-specific pen pals than real-world friendships.
Wait a second. Did you guys actually have pen pals? Did you guys ever do that?
I did. I had
did a pen that. Pal. Was that a 90s thing?
I didn't have one ever.
No.
Like, you wrote somebody letters who you did not know.
Yeah. You Bethany said
it.
She did.
No. Yeah. But you guys...
I don't even remember her name. I think it was Emily.
She was...
She probably remembers
you
your
never
name.
Met her in person.
Emily, if you're listening. I'm sorry. Emily.
She's like, I was so close with you.
So this is interesting, though, that he says that real-world friendships are marked by physical closeness involving handshakes, hugs, back slaps, shared meals and drinks, and all the intimacy that accompanies them, and the possibility of holistic self-exposure beyond the specific endeavor that initially brought the friends together. Whether you and your friend originally became close playing or watching sports, shopping, or participating in a book club, that foundation can open up the possibility of a deeper or broader sharing of memories, hopes, thoughts, and fears, the full stories of our lives. Online relationships are different. And the way that they're different is obvious, right? It doesn't open itself up to that same kind of full-orbed sharing of life and sharing of self. And so as David French reflects on all this, what he suggests is, hey, we're going to actually experience continued fraying in our society if this trend continues, because what's happening is people have less real friendships and more digital facsimiles of friendships that are sheerly based on affinities. And David French acknowledges, hey, and as soon as the affinity goes away, the relationship goes away, right? Because if the only thing that binds us together is, hey, we both hate Donald Trump, or we both hate, libs, or we both hate wokeness, or we both hate whatever, and our friendship is primarily online, then as soon as I change my mind on that, or as soon as I try to be more nuanced on that, or as soon as we disagree, well, there's nothing else to sustain a real relationship there. And so French says this is one reason why we're experiencing so much polarization and so much extended loneliness, is just because the online, whatever that is, online relationship, is not in any way a replacement for real, actual, physical friendship. What are your thoughts?
In which he's also suggesting that you can be friends with people who have differences.
Yeah, exactly.
Is basically what he's saying. Yeah. He opens with a really good personal example of that with a friend named Leo.
Yes.
That he's still friends with, who shares completely different political views and just has a completely different angle on life.
And if you have good friendships, you probably have some friends like this who just like, man, you don't agree with them on a lot of things, but there's just, they're friends because you've been through deep shared experiences together. And so you don't have to agree on every little thing about life.
And I think it's important to say there's a commitment to that. As soon as you're, it doesn't have to be as soon as you're not with me, you're against me.
Okay. So if this is, and obviously sociologically, this is just data, okay, right? So this is just true. Americans have fewer friends than we once did. What are the implications of this, do you guys think, for the gospel and for the mission of the church?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously it affects community. Like if the church is a people, then there needs to be some intimacy, some shared aspect of life together. And I think I know from my experience, the church has been a place where I've experienced good friendships. And if we're struggling with that as a society, that's going to affect that shared community that the church is designed to have by the Spirit's work.
To me, I see it as an opportunity. I think the church, because the church is a people, I think in a disconnected, more lonely than ever kind of culture, while it's connected in a lot of ways, it's maybe you could argue that it's more connected, but it's not connected in an intimate way.
More connected, but more alone.
More connected, but more alone. We're more alone than ever. So I actually see that as a missional opportunity. I think the church is going to actually be the hope of the world for healthy, sustainable relationships. And the community is going to be genuine, and that's going to be centered around Christ as a relationship as well. Because it's interesting to me that in an article like this, in a situation like this, in an online presence that everybody has like we do today, it's interesting that at the end of the day, the Lord sets up the church, and the church is a relational container of sorts for people to actually be in intimate relationship with one another.
I think it's interesting. Let's explore that, because what this is telling you, if you're a listener, is, hey, the context of your mission, your mission field, the context in which we're trying to have an impact for the gospel, is lonelier than it has ever been. People around you have fewer friends. There are probably, 10% of the people that you know have no close friends. And so what does that mean for us? How should that shape how we think about our ministry and our mission? And I think I have two immediate sort of things that come to mind. Number one, this means there's an opportunity for Christians to be the people who display healthy friendship. So there's a sense in which just the displaying, the putting on display of the kind of community that the gospel should create will be attractive to people who are longing for those kinds of friendships. So love one another, right? Like do what the New Testament says. Mm-hmm. Love one another earnestly. Bear with one another in love. Let's cultivate the kind of real, meaningful community that the world is looking for. The other thing that I'm thinking there is just that as these articles map out the why of this, one of the things they point out is that for men, traditionally, one of the places you made friends was at work. And especially in your grandfather's day, maybe your father's day, you worked the same job most of your life. I mean, you probably worked for the same employer for your whole life or most of your life. And just the people you worked with over time became friends. It's been said that women's friendships tend to be more face to face. Men's friendships tend to be more shoulder to shoulder. Men tend to become friends in the process of, doing something or going after some goal. And that's just a reality of how male friendships work. What's interesting about that is if the workplace is more isolated, if we're working from home remotely, right? If we change jobs more often, the context where we can make friendships is just lacking. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an interesting opportunity here for Christians just to say, hey, what if we just became the people who are asking, how can we create contexts where meaningful friendships could form? They might not form, but just how are we creating the relational container where there's a possibility that people could become friends? I think that can be in church gatherings. It could be gospel communities, small groups. It could even be the way you engage in your neighborhood, block parties and having people over to your house and those kinds of things. How are we creating just the context where there's a possibility that people could become friends?
Well, there's a piece too of that, Bob, that where you have to have a vision of, I'm going to stay in this place for a long time. Because if you're bouncing from job to job or bouncing from house to house or city to city, church to church, you're not going to have a lot of time to create those friendships. So I feel like that transiency that we're experiencing in life today can affect how deep those friendships go. Yeah.
So, and what I'm saying is I would love it if every listener to this podcast as a Christian just said, hey, part of my calling should be to just try to create spaces where there's room, opportunity for friendship, for people just to have the interactions that they would normally have in 40 years ago, you know, normally in a world where things were more face-to-face and more communal. Because what I think that does is it gives us a chance to just be an answer to the problem. I can't create a friendship between any two people, but sometimes just creating a context where that friendship can come to life is a really, really meaningful thing to do. And I think that's an opportunity the church has.
It's one of the reasons volunteering is really, really great. Not just that you're filling a need, but that you're actually meeting other people. I think, I don't know, like half the people I know at Coram Deo I've met through serving through Coram Deo Kids or through the sound, you know, thing on Sunday morning. It's like, I've met so many people that I would never have ever met or been able to, you know, say hi to in the hallway if I hadn't like volunteered and actually given my time, not just to, you know, coffee shop meetups, but like actually serving in the church.
Well, I think this is why, you know, we're committed to gospel community. Not everybody in your gospel community is going to be your best friend, but I think the committing of let's devote time in our schedule to being together and to trying to cultivate a meaningful shared sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, friendship around the gospel is a powerful, compelling thing. And it doesn't always feel powerful and compelling. Sometimes it just feels lame and weird and awkward and like a Wednesday night. But you have to keep the big picture in mind, right? So did your dad's bowling league. So did going to work every, like the things that actually have the deepest meaning and create the deepest opportunity for relationship never seem like the things that are dramatic and life-changing. They just seem very normal. But it's over time in that very normalness that these kinds of friendships get created. Let's take it a different direction, Dusty, and just ask, okay, so one implication this has is for our mission as a church, for the people of God being a place where real friendship can cultivate and for Christians having a vision of how can we create space for people to get to know each other. But we have to acknowledge, too, that if this is a sociological study of Americans and we sitting around this table are all Americans, then this is our reality, too. So we're living in a world where some of us are going to have a harder time shaping friendships where friendship is just on the decline in general. So how can we cultivate healthy friendships? How does the average person, the average Christian wanting to walk with Jesus, make sure that they have maybe not 12 like Jesus, but but two or three significant friendships? Let me ask the question differently. What have you found helpful in cultivating friendship in your life? Or what have you found challenging?
I have an answer that is actually, I believe, a Dusty White answer.
Whoa.
From, I don't know if this was from a Wednesday conversation episode, but you said it and it like has stuck in my mind. And that is to be declarative with your friendships. Like whether that's, I mean, it could be awkward and being like,
I
hey,
want to be your
I'm going to be your friend. Yeah. But also like, yeah, tell people you want to be their friend.
I remember you saying that. I think that was on a podcast.
Or that you value them as your friend so they know that you consider them a friend. I think that that's just one kind of simple and small way that, yeah, that helps. That's helped me at least.
Yeah, I believe I probably said that in the context of friendship. And I've said that many times, maybe it's here, maybe it's everywhere. But I think especially men, you know, like French is talking about the decline in friendship for men. Men are really bad at declaring that. They feel awkward about it. I think it's okay to enter into a relationship where you feel like, oh, this is kind of working. Let's make sure it works. You know, that's different than like, oh, I hope that this keeps going. I think it's really important to say, if relationships are really important to us and important to God, which I think they are, we see that all throughout scripture, he relates to us and he comes to us in relationship, you know? And so I think it's important to say, hey, I think this friendship can glorify God. And I think I need you in my life. And I think you need me in your life. And let's see where the Lord takes this, you know, not in a weird it's almost like a Travis, like a define the relationship kind of moment, you know, like this is a thing that we're a thing, I think. But it is important. I think declaration does create, Bethany, a sense of security, a sense of intimacy, and a sense of, you're committed to this. Mm-hmm. And we're
doing this.
We're doing mm-hmm. this. I mean, now this could change, of course, but I think when you declare stuff, it's helpful.
Yeah.
That's how I made one of my closest friends in college. He was a grade above me, and we never had any classes together except for like band, where we never really saw each other. But I could tell him, like, I think this is a guy that I'd probably be really good friends with. I think we'd really click. And so I caught him at cafeteria one time, and I was like, hey, this is a little weird, but I think we'd be really good friends, and I'd like to, like, be your friend.
Good job.
It was a little awkward, but I could tell, like, I'm an awkward person, and I could tell he was a pretty awkward person, and so he took it really well, and, like, we hung out quite a bit after that. Now, like, to this day, he's still, like, one of my really close friends. I told the middle schoolers that, and they were all appalled. They were like, no, you didn't.
Not say that.
They were like, you should have totally texted him instead.
You should have snapped him.
The author of this study, Daniel Cox, at the very end of the article says this: despite the grim outlook, there's a simple solution. One of the most important things that friendships require is time. Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
We have to rededicate time to fostering friendships. And that's one of the things that I've realized over the past 5 or 6 years of my life is just, if I don't plan for it,
yes,
it ain't happening.
Yeah.
I got plenty of other things that are going to consume my time.
Intentionality on the time.
And so, you know, I've told this story in multiple venues, but 6 years ago, some of my pastor friends, one of them in particular, just grabbed four of the rest of us and said, hey, look, we're all at the same stage in life and leadership, and let's just commit to being together once a year and to doing like 2 or 3 days where we're just like going to go somewhere and just be in a room and serve each other by listening and caring and loving and hanging out together. And let's just create this little container where we can sort of do life together. So we just made that commitment of like, all right, I'm gonna give you 2 to 3 days of my calendar. We're doing this. And it's been amazing. It's been really life-giving. It's cultivated really meaningful friendships for all of us. But it took, if we hadn't done that, we would just have the idea of like, oh yeah, I got some guys I should hang out with, but I'm never actually together with them.
And it is different than, you know, you're comparing that to generations ago. It used to be that guys would work together and they would do stuff together. And then all of a sudden they'd take a fishing trip together, which sometimes that still happens. But it does take intentionality of somebody saying, hey, let's do this. Let's get in the same room together. Let's listen well and things like that. Travis, we're a little bit older than you. Mm-hmm. I am curious from your perspective, with having grown up with the internet and the technological world, what does all this sound like to you on friendship and with the digital age kind of inserted into that?
Yeah, I think in some ways, I feel like that's something that I long for and yearn for. And when I'm especially engaging with people that are pretty much younger than me and also kind of like my same age, every single time that I get asked for like their Snapchat username, which I like only recently got, I'm just like, okay, but like, if I want to get to know you, I want to like actually see you face to face. I want to do things with you. I don't want to just send you messages all the time. And I think that's something that I've run across as like, I don't know, like not a problem, but just over and over again, people that are my age more wanting to just text and never actually hang out or do anything with each other. Just send messages, send memes and GIFs and things and like that are funny, but like,
thanks for calling them GIFs and not GIFs. I appreciate that.
But yeah, I noticed that and I long for actual interaction, which is why I think the pandemic has been really difficult for my generation of just, I mean, it's been bad for everybody, but, just like not having spaces to go see each other with.
Mm. Well, and I think that is an interesting shift and something that as Christians, we're going to have to push against and work mm-hmm. against because a text, a meme, a Snapchat, even a FaceTime conversation is not the same thing as being face to face with somebody or sharing an experience together. It's just not.
Yeah. There's something to be said almost like I feel like I know a lot of people who have anxiety around the idea of starting a conversation mm-hmm. or having a conversation, mm-hmm. like an actual face to face conversation. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if kind of like the art of conversation has tanked because of text messages and things like that. So I don't really have an answer, but I think that that is an important piece that is worth thinking about.
I remember when my wife and I were dating, all we had was AOL Instant Messenger, and we would chat all the time. And then we would like go out on dates, or we'd see each other at youth group or a concert or something. And we'd literally have nothing to talk about because we talked about everything through the chat. And so, even in the infancy of, you know, what digital social conversation looked like, I remember the effect that that had. And I grew up with Jenny. Like, we were friends before we were chatting on Instant Messenger. So yeah, I can imagine what it's like trying to build and form relationships with people today with all the different ways we have to reach out and touch someone.
He said that.
I think it was
Northwestern Bell.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was, but it's a little shady now. We don't live in that world anymore, that. Mike. I think we need to embrace. So I'm mindful of two things. I want our listeners to embrace two things. One, friendship is important, and it's going to take work. Mm-hmm. You need friends. And you need real friendships that aren't just about a shared interest or a shared affinity in one area of your life. For those to exist. So I want you to just embrace that at a value level. And then second, don't be overwhelmed by it. Like Bethany said, I'm an introvert. I don't want a lot of friends. I want a few friends, but I can't actually sustain a lot of friendships.
Hey, according to the graph though, you're on the top end.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So what I want you to have a vision for is, hey, start with the question, do you have one or two real meaningful friendships in your life? And if not, then just pray and seek to build one or two and start there, right? You don't need 10. If you have 10, great. But you do need to start somewhere. And I think sometimes when I hear conversations like this, it can feel overwhelming to me of like, oh man, I got so much work to do in my friendships and my relationships. But really what this study is saying is, hey, to be healthy, right? To be socially and culturally and personally healthy, we need friends. And the only way to gain friends is to go hang out in the cafeteria and ask people if they want to be friends or whatever, right? Whatever your version of Travis's story is, to begin taking some of those intentional steps to move toward people in your life, and to actually pray that God would bring people maybe into your life that aren't there currently that you can cultivate those things with. Because I really do think I always tell my wife, hey, someday we're going to be 70 and we need to have people that we actually want to hang out with when we're 70, you know, like we can't be lonely and isolated and like calling up our kids, seeing what they're doing. Like with the work we're doing now is what's going to set the trajectory for that stage of our lives. And I think I want every Christian thinking that way of like, hey, you might not feel like this is a crisis in your life right now, because maybe you're busy or maybe you have lots of energy swirling around you and you don't feel super lonely. But man, to sustain discipleship to Christ for the long haul, you got to have friends. You just need them.
And I also think it's important, you know, I don't think we have to, while we have to work at it, there also should be some affinity and there should be some natural just connection to it. And then you can be declarative. But I also think it is important for us, especially as Christians in the church, to also have some friends that
aren't Christians.
That aren't Christians for sure. And do actually require a little bit of work. So you can't just have friends that are all just like you, you know?
Yeah.
I do think as Christians, it needs to be predominantly Christian. It needs to be encouraging and it needs to be sharpening and exhorting at times. But I think it's really important for our, French uses some sort of phrase about the land. It is important for the land for us to have robust friendships that aren't just people like us.
I got to tell you a cool story. I think some of you guys know this, but in second grade, when I lived in Fountain Valley, California, which is in Orange County, I went to second grade at Fred Moyola Elementary School. And my good friend in second grade was Dan Gilbert. He was a Jewish kid. So different background for me, different family, man, we played on the playground every day. I don't know what friendship was like in second grade as a 7-year-old, but I just remember like, this guy was my good friend. And there's like, you know, we'd walk to school together and there's like photos from that area of us together and our little brothers together. Well, 10 years ago, I'm attending a charity event in Omaha and I run into Dan Gilbert. I haven't seen this guy in 30, 40 years. And so now he lives here. Like it's a random deal. You know, I moved away from California. Anyway, we both ended up in Omaha. And so we hang out once a year or once every 6 months. And he, I mean, has a totally different sort of worldview than I do. And in a lot of ways is very different from me. But man, it's just really fun to think like, yeah, but like we have a friendship that goes back 40 years. That's a really long time. And there's something about that that I just want to continue to cultivate that and strengthen that bond, because there is something to me that's just like, man, I love hanging out with people that don't see the world the way I do, don't read the Bible the way I do, don't think about life the way I do, but that there's a real shared affinity and friendship there that's really true and deep.
Yeah. And it's really fun to also celebrate that out loud.
Yeah.
You know, as much as you're declaring out loud, you also can celebrate that out loud. I have a similar story with a childhood friend, and now our kids are growing up together and we're connecting and they're in a different state, but we're like, we pulled out these VHS videos.
Did you have a way to play them?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
my friend does,
because
he's techie like that. he's got them all on his computer by now, but they were totally VHS. We had to like wear this backpack size thing to record them.
Man.
And it's him and I on our bikes and ramping and stuff. And our kids are just like, that is you guys, you know? And I think it's really good to be like, man, that is such an evidence of grace that this is sustainable. And this is a rare gift from God, you know, that this is a thing. So I think it's good to declare and good to celebrate out loud.
Well, listeners, friendship is in decline in America, but that's an opportunity for you to cultivate healthy friendships and for us as the people of God to be creating spaces where people can really begin to know each other and become friends. So I hope you hear this both as a challenge and as an encouragement to the kind of gospel friendship and gospel community that the scriptures call us to.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.